Welcome to the Disrupt Education Podcast. I'm Peter Hostrasser, the host. Hey, thanks so much for hanging out with us today. Appreciate it. Do me a favor, hit that subscribe button. Make sure you get the podcast as soon as it comes out. We're all about disrupting education and asking people how they would change education or how they are currently changing education. Head over to disrupteducation.co and you can check this podcast out there as well. You can read my blog and connect and see what's going on in the disrupt education world. Also, I'm a proud member of the EdUp Experience Podcast Network. EdUpExperience.com. Head over there. You're going to see a lot around innovation and education, basically from pre-K all the way through post-secondary education and beyond. It's an amazing platform. Take a look at EdUpExperience.com. Also, today I have a wonderful guest. His name is Eric Gibbs. Academic integrity has been at the core of Eric's professional career for over 20 years. In those two decades, he's served in various high-growth ed tech leadership roles like Applia, Cengage Learning, and Turnitin. And now he's a president of Original, O-U-R-I-G-I-N-A-L, Original, or Our Original, a plagiarism software that assists K-12 districts and higher education institutions in safeguarding their academic integrity initiatives. I got to tell you, this is more than just plagiarism software. There's a lot of education in this and teaching students how to really do things the right way and safeguarding. This is a great conversation with Eric. You don't want to miss it. Coming up right after this on Disrupt Education. Are you an individual or business wanting to create an online course or training program, but are overwhelmed with the e-learning process and don't even know where to start? If so, you don't want to miss this free masterclass called Create and Launch a Successful E-Learning Program, Online Course, or Virtual Training, where you will learn the biggest mistake most people make with e-learning, the number one reason most e-learning programs fail, and the three pillars to create extraordinary value for your learners every time, and much more. Get instant access to the free masterclass right now by clicking on the link in the description. All you have to do is sign in and you will get instant access to this free masterclass right now. I recently asked Jake, who is a sophomore in high school, why he uses SpikeView to share his learning journey.
I think it's really cool that, you know, SpikeView is really putting that abstract into concrete data and knowledge and then displaying that to the outside world. And I think SpikeView is different than anything else out there. Like I said before, because it's really taking that, you know, those abstract skill sets and those abstract experiences and putting them into data that, you know, is actually mathematic and scientific and, you know, that matches you up with the best programs and, you know, best places for you. People, you know, who are really trying to make those changes in the world, and they're going to be using SpikeView because SpikeView is that app where you can, you know, take those experiences and take those passions and put them out there. And share with other people, and that's, you know, that's really powerful. And to that, you know, that professional networking piece, you know, to be with other like-minded teenagers, that puts you ahead. That puts you ahead in a lot of ways. And so, you know, I think anyone who uses SpikeView right now has a leg up in the future, and excited to see, you know, where those SpikeView alumni head up.
Head to SpikeView.com. Start your portfolio now for free. The Disrupt Education vlog can be found on YouTube. To hear it in podcast form, search Disrupt Education on any of the following podcast platforms: Anchor, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Breaker, CastBox, Overcast, Radio Public, Pocket Cast, Spotify, or Stitcher. Welcome to this episode of Disrupt Education. I'm Peter Hostrasser. Thank you so much for being here. Remember to check out unlearningcoach.com. I've got a wonderful guest today. He's the president of America's.
It's America's.
Absolutely. Just America's of Original, our original, O-U-R-I-G-N-A-L. Eric Gibbs is with us today. Hey, Eric, thanks so much for hanging out with us.
Thanks for having me, Peter.
Oh man, I'm excited. So let's tell it. That was very quick and a little bit botched in there. So tell us a little bit about what you do and who you are.
Yeah, so you're exactly right. So President of the Americas. I've spent the last 2 years really launching Original in North America and LATAM. So just who is Original, I guess, a quick kind of elevator pitch of what is Original. So we're a set of online academic integrity tools and services that are utilized for K-12 colleges and universities, corporations. And what we really try to do is to assist those in institutions and schools in ensuring their originality and authenticity of written work. And so where Original came from was two companies, European companies, Erkend in Sweden and PlagScan from Germany, really combining 3 decades worth of knowledge and experience with the tech similarity detection and academic integrity.
I can't wait to unpack that because, man, I've got so much. I teach students in business to write, and I myself am a fighter of writing. I don't think I'm good at it. And then, you know, we'll talk about the straying and copying and pasting and all these different levels of that you work with. But first, before we get into that, Eric, let's take a look at your own educational path. What was that like? You're a tech guy. You've been through a lot in that area. But let's go back to Eric as a student in K-12. What were you like?
Yeah, so I actually grew up in two small towns. Grew up in southern Missouri and then western Illinois. So, you know, I always like to say I was forced to embrace change and kind of adversity early on. Had 2 moves, once in 7th grade and once in junior year in high school. So prior to any kind of startup that I've ever been associated with, if you think about kind of what were those pillars for that you look for in startups, change management and adversity, being able to embrace it. So, you know, it kind of small rural communities, my passions and kind of what I embraced, I love math, I love sciences. I was a first generation college graduate, so, you know, really didn't know what I wanted to do. I kind of liked the STEM fields, planning on kind of going to med school. That was kind of the goal. You know, doctors make money, right? So that's what I was going to do. And, really it wasn't until, got into the University of Missouri, I got into, teaching SAT and ACT courses for Kaplan and really kind of embrace kind of, this is when test prep was going computer adaptive that I really started kind of getting into kind of the educational technology side of things. So that's where I kind of got my first kind of taste of ed tech, if you will.
Yeah, that's talking about that at the college level to find that is almost a gem. And kudos to you and Mizzou for doing that and kind of throwing those opportunities out to you. So then let's get to the journey to Original. So after Kaplan, what was that journey to where you are now?
So the first startup that I really was with was a small little startup called MetaCollege. It was an LMS based in Santa Barbara. It was during the tech bubble and burst, lasted all of about 6 months before I was unemployed. I always like to say the best thing that came out of that was my wife, because I met her. She was an employee that we found ourselves gainfully unemployed. So, you know, it was really fun, though. I mean, it was during that kind of, it was once Blackboard and all of these LMSs were, you know, WebCT, eCollege, all of them were really starting to get their niche. So it was an exciting time. It was short lived. But after that, it really propelled me into really the kind of the first start, successful start was with a little Bay Area a startup called Applia. And it was a Stanford economist, now Nobel laureate, but it really wasn't about the whole idea of the technology. It was really kind of the story of trying to get student engagement. And so take away the technology, and the story was, let's try to get students more engaged outside the classroom with doing more kind of learn by doing, not kind of true false numeric entry, but supply and demand. It was an economic software, getting them engaged outside the classroom, so they're more prepared inside the classroom. And from a technology company standpoint, it was really high touch from a customer service levels. And then this is where it really started from a professional career. This is where I met my mentor for 14 years. Then it started propelling me and my mentor to be able to work together. So it was a fantastic experience, both kind of professionally, but also personally, to allow us to kind of, you know, establish that journey for the next 14 years that, you know, allowed me to be able to work beside her.
And so now we're the president of an amazing company. Let's unpack what Original is before I get to the big question of how do you see education moving forward? Because you're obviously the company is doing that. But tell us a little bit about where you are now and what is Original and R. I like to say R, O-U-R. You have great videos on your website. You're worldwide. You're doing some amazing things. We can see the clocks behind you for those watching on the YouTube channel. Let's unpack that. Let's talk about how you're changing education and helping not only educators, but students engage even outside of a classroom.
Let's first talk about kind of what is the issue with academic integrity. You know, we talk about plagiarism, we talk about academic integrity, but I also like to start kind of set a benchmark of what is the issue with academic
integrity. Right, right.
You hear that word, I think it's kind of a buzzword. And so the most well-known kind of study referring to academic integrity in higher education, is with the International Center for Academic Integrity and the late Dr. Don McCabe. But for your listeners, I think what we'll do is we'll talk about the high school kind of study that they did as well. So McCabe's survey, which was a survey that was sent to students that self-selected the survey, he surveyed over 70,000 high school students within the U.S., and it demonstrated that 64% of students admitted to cheating on a test, while 58% admitted to plagiarism, and then 95% said they participated in some form of cheating, whether it was on a test, plagiarism, and copying of homework. So, you know, just talking about the statistics, I would say there's significant reason and concern, you know, to have to remember that this, you know, for us to actually have the conversation of why students are actually doing this, right? And then also remember this study was conducted from 2002 to 2015. So a lot of this is done before digitalization, online tools. And so, you know, I think what I would have to say is, what are tools like an Original going to do to assist students and to assist school districts, colleges, universities, et cetera, to deter the use and of plagiarism and cheating in the classroom? So we don't want to be a plagiarism police, right? That's not where we want this conversation to go. You know, first and foremost, the conversation here is that an Original and plagiarism prevention tools are not plagiarism detection tools. So that's the first misnomer in the market and anything associated with these types of tools. We don't detect plagiarism. What we do is we match the content to the individual submitter or the student's artifact that they've submitted to the application. Now, where I want to empathize with students is whenever a student submits to these applications, you might go on Twitter as a listener, or you might actually have utilized one of these applications, and you say you get a score as you've matched the content. 75% is the actual actual score that you might think it says plagiarized. As I said, we don't detect plagiarism. So here's the deal. What we want to do is we want to help students to understand what the tool does, but also then to help them in their citations, right? So this is where the tool becomes a teaching and learning tool. So the original conversation, Peter, was let's talk about the magnitude of kind of this academic integrity issue, right? So what we're doing is we're deterring, but we're also utilizing the tool as a teaching and learning device.
And I really like that because the plagiarism police, no one likes that. But, you know, it's funny because, you know, as you're speaking about the percentages and connecting and helping students kind of identify, you know, where they can cite their stuff, it's okay, right? Like, it's okay to actually look up other people's work and grow from that, but also, you know, make sure that it's you're not taking it your own. But you're teaching them to do that as well. That's what I like about this. And in our previous conversation, we talked a little bit about, you know, yeah, the older ones, you know, you had like Turnitin and these other things that were just like straight up, nope, or yes, you know, and this goes a little bit further. What are some of the success stories and some of the things that you've seen with high schools and students, in fact, giving you feedback on this?
Yeah, I think, you know, the way that we position a conversation is we're modernizing an academic integrity initiative. So what we want to do is to put the student at the focus of the conversation. So there are tools out there that students are utilizing that really kind of take students off the guardrails, right? So, Peter, what we hear from the International Center for Academic Integrity, 20% of students will always cheat. 20% of students will never cheat. 60% of students will, you know, that is the individual students that we're trying to protect and keep on the guardrails. And so what we want to do is involve these students to for best practices, right? And so what our tools will allow us to do is to allow that formative use case. And what I mean by formative use case is not the plagiarism police methodology, right? It's being able to submit, if it's an assignment is due on Friday night, submit multiple times throughout the week. Check the citation, check to make sure it's properly cited. And then if we have kind of that moment of, I didn't properly cite this, or if I'm running up against a deadline and I did potentially copy and paste from an internet source and forget to cite, then you've already witnessed that actual in a report, the match, and you can go back in and change it. We want to have this full disclosure with the student. We're not here to actually trap you. We're not here to say that this is a plagiarism detection tool. There's no such thing. We've established that. So we want to have this bond with the end user to be able to have this kind of empathy as well as then disclosure to with the individual learner to work with them. It's just as much as an establishment that we're trying to have with our clients, not only the client as the district to protect their integrity, but also with the end user, the student, to be able to assist them in their learning process.
Underneath this, I hear in between the lines here, cycle of learning. Yes. I also hear even networking. Like there, you know, when you do find research, now you can find communities, you know, the sightings and where these things are being matched up through your program and going into, you know, I just have an idea of a business. I'm a business educator. So if somebody's yes. doing a report on a business or doing some research and they say something, your software picks it up and says, well, this was written here. Guess what? You, instead of saying you cheated, now you have an opportunity to say, okay, well, let's number one, make sure you cite that. Number two, why don't you, let's find a way to reach out and connect outside the classroom, which is wonderful for me as an educator. But I feel there's a culture change that needs to happen in a lot of, at least in the Americas here, around education being cyclical. And rather, and not just straight linear. And you did it, you didn't. Let's move on. What are your thoughts on that? And you know, even beyond original, you know, I think you know students just want to check the box, and every educator yeah. doesn't want students to check the box. We want yeah. students to get uncomfortable, but be comfortable being uncomfortable, learning in these moments. So this is the big question, you know, how do you see, what are the biggest needs that you see, let's just say in secondary, you know, 9 through 12 here in America, or, you know, where, however it is in across the world, what do you see the biggest changes that, you see as a primary need, that our students, staff, systems need to do?
Yeah, I mean, I'll unpack this a couple of ways. I mean, I have a, you know, my wife and I have a junior going in high school or going junior, right? So we approach this very, very similar. You know, it's not the top down of here's the reason why. It's not the top down saying you can't do this. It's just not, it's not a binary choice. We have to put a little context around this. And so a lot of the reasons in an academic integrity policy, even if it's in K-12, a high school, or even in higher education, there's not a lot of parameters that allow you, you know, to see the why. So, you know, I reference a lot of the International Center for Academic Integrity, and I'm going to lean back on them again here. And the reason, and I'm going to come around on the reason why here at the end. But I always reference kind of their six fundamental values that they really push on, which is honesty, trust, fairness, respect, responsibility, and courage. And so if we think about this, and whether it's a student sitting in their home being homeschooled, high schoolers, college graduate, you know, graduate schools, someday those students are going to be in our global workforce, right? And so the values that we're talking about today, whether it's in a high school, and it could even go down to middle school, I think we could talk about this earlier. I'm hopeful that those six fundamental values can be put into practice early enough, because those individuals are going to be someday in the global workforce, right? And so if we reinforce those, that can only be global good, right? So that's something that I think today, that academic integrity, while we talk about it in an individual class, if individuals are cutting edges, right, and skirting the system, that only just is magnified when those individuals get into the labor force. So, you know, we have that conversation daily at our house with our son. And I know I'm beating a dead horse here, but this is something that I think will benefit us in the long run as those individuals get into the global economy.
We both actually have the same age of son. My son is going into his junior year as well. We just sent him off to camp and he's uncomfortable, which I like, right? Safely uncomfortable.
Yes.
Those conversations are the why. How do you think that transition is going to go, even post-pandemic? I think it exposed a lot of things even further, where, you know, the digital divide is happening. We have several different ages, generations of educators in the building. And also our students are asking more and more why, because of all the information, some misinformation, some legit information coming into them across the board. In your mind, like, how do we do that? How do we continue to keep our kids in the system, even though it's not perfect, but building for themselves? That's a difficult question, I know, but
no, Peter, I love the question. And I think it's probably one of the best one I've gotten asked in 2021. So I appreciate it. You know, I think back, you know, we started out talking about kind of my schooling. Your parents hated that, right? When you asked why, right? Think about that. Back in the day, you don't ask why, just do it. Gosh, if there's kids if kids listening to this, just keep asking why. You know, be sponges, just try to keep getting that knowledge out there. I think this is a good time. I think that we as education technology companies need to be able to provide more to districts, more to colleges and universities. You just can't put a Zoom, you just can't put a video with a platform and then throw on some multiple choice tests and expect a good outcome. You know, I think if we did that in 2020, there needs to be some regression analysis going on to QA it up for a better pedagogical solution, because it's just not, you know, if that was an individual's first exposure to online learning, ouch, it's just not going to be a good exposure. And it's not pedagogically sound. So I think we know what good learning science shows us. We have to go back and revise that. And now let's do this at scale. You know, when we talk about access, we should be able to do this at scale and be, you know, show individuals principles that it doesn't take 4 years in college. You shouldn't have to have seat time. I mean, this is a different conversation, right? But you shouldn't have to have that long of a cycle to be able to show when a student's competency could be done in 3 weeks versus 12 or 16 weeks. So I think there's some things that our technology can provide that's very good. I think that the teacher and the professor, the coaching styles can actually be refined, but we need to go back and actually refine this. I mean, we had a complete mess last year, and now it's a matter of just going back and refining this whole process.
Yeah, it is. I call it the beautiful mess, because when messes happen, that means you have an opportunity to see where the leaks are and you know, how can you clean up? And, you know, I like the fact that you said, you know, nothing is perfect. It's more individualized. And, you know, that's, I feel not only just with the company you're at, but also in general as a father, we're trying to get our kids to ask those why and then seek the answers. It's a yes and. There's a lot of social emotional pieces in there. There's a lot of different ways, and we could go on and on about college, which I love. I know we could just sit back and probably have a beer and talk about college, because that's our next step for as parents.
Right.
Other than asking why, with parents right now, having their kids ask why, what kind of advice would you give another parent listening to the podcast who possibly has a kid transitioning into college, maybe burnt out of college or not really understanding what they want to do?
For me, the hardest part was, you know, whenever you're trying to tell a young student, or again, putting myself into what we tell our son, it's basically turning the model or the conversation completely almost upside down from the conversation I had with, or our parents had with us. And if you think about winning at all costs, the conversations have changed. It was always about the W's. It's never about failures. And, you know, I think the fail fast and learn for future successes is not talked about enough. And in the, you know, in the startup world, that's everything. Failure is not a bad thing. And I think when we engage with this, and certainly when I coached in, you know, our son's basketball leagues, kids would look at you like you had three heads when you started talking about failures. You know, the failures that we had this game is actually good, because we're going to knock it out of the park, you know, three games down. We've learned from this. And, you know, there's a negative connotation with the word, and most of that comes from exposure and reinforcement, you know, in early age in sports, and continues into the workplace. And I think probably that's, you know, it's got to be demystified. I would also say not all failures are created equal. And what I mean by that are there are preventable and unavoidable failures, which are considered bad. We would all probably agree with that. But there are intelligent or boundary pushing failures, which are considered good. And that's what I'm really talking about. You know, those new drug therapies or new business models, those are, you know, that's the ones that, new customer support methodology, success, you know, processes to optimize. That's the ones that in the ed tech world, those are the ones that we can actually do. You know, going back and QAing, like I was talking about from 2020, we can change that. We saw the mess. Let's go back, optimize it, show where those learning gains can be made. And then, you know, that's where those strategic innovations really come from. So, you know, these types of failures really kind of get that paradigm shift. And that's the substantial advances that we're hoping for. So talk to your kids about failures. I mean, that's a good thing. Learn from them. Just don't trip over the same pothole every single time when you know it's there. And I think that's going, you know, that really will assist us not only personally, but also then professionally in the long run.
I think going back to our parents, the failure actually more projected onto them, right? They're like, oh, my kid is this, and that was beautifully put. I really appreciate your lens on that. And, you know, being a father like you with about the same years of our children, it is true, you know, walking them through the failures that they can learn from. And the W, I mean, I think of the Olympics. I mean, we've seen a lot of different things there where, you know, the win at all cost is not healthy. It's not for anybody, clients, business, what have you. Yeah. So I appreciate that. And I appreciate you sharing your journey. I do want to give you an opportunity to let people know, how can they connect with you? How can they connect with Original and find out more?
Yeah, absolutely. Come to original.com. That's O-U-R-I-G-I-N-A-L.com. Also, any comments, feedback, if you'd like introductions to other researchers or individuals at ICAI, that's the International Center for Academic Integrity, I'd be more than happy to make those introductions. It's just eric.gibbs@original.com. I'd love the feedback. I'd love to connect on LinkedIn. I think that's the biggest thing. Collaboration is kind of where it's at today. So I'd love to be able to connect with your listeners.
Thank you so much again. And it is refreshing to hear ed tech companies looking more at the end user rather than the win at all costs. They're starting to separate. And I know Original is one that really cares about, hey, let's really get people moving forward, understanding the learning process, learning how to fail and figure it out and move forward with everybody involved. So I appreciate that and appreciate you. Thank you so much for hanging out with us on Disrupt Education today.
Yeah, Peter, thank you. And again, thank you, your listeners as well.
Awesome. Thank you all for listening. We'll catch you next time on Disrupt Education.